The Press Box is here to catch you up on the latest media stories. Hosted by Brian Curtis and David Shoemaker, these guys have the insight on the biggest stories you care about. Check out The Press Box on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
But no, you understand?
I'll cut that bit out.
Hi everyone, welcome to Writer's House. Hope you are all safe and well. Today we're going to give out so many flowers. First of all, to Serena Williams on her unbelievable career. Then to Hector Bellerin and also Alex Iwobi. And finally, we're going to talk about the brilliant Luis Figo affair documentary. And joining us in a minute will be Musa Kwanga and Ryan Hun. He's with me now.
Hi mate.
How you doing, bro?
I'm right, how are you?
Yeah, I'm really
That's
cool.
A strong top.
You like that top? It's really, honestly, can I say, I really, really like it.
And you know, I can tell.
You know what? I've got so many, some of the top Adidas tops, they're so cool at the moment. I've got Mexico, I've got Argentina. I've got so much stuff at the moment I'm so happy about.
Man's dripping in drip.
Dripping in drip. That's the one.
The reason I've come in a little bit early before Musa comes on is because
go on.
We've got our own feed now. Writer's House has its own feed. Yeah. So for anyone who hasn't yet subscribed. Actually, you might have already subscribed if you're listening to this. I can't figure out that I'm getting a bit meta.
No, don't. You're not meta. It's fine. Just tell people, baby.
Search for Writer's House on Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Yeah. And also, now that we're, you know, kind of a little bit, we're not on Ringer FC.
Mm.
So, you know, maybe we can talk about a few non-football bits as well.
Yeah, I think that's like, well, this is what I'm quite excited about, to talk about that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Something like what we're going to probably do today.
We're working on a few things. Might add a few little regular segments, loads of flowers today, as we mentioned, and also there might be a Wall of Fame entrant
inductee,
and also I'm just looking forward to turning this into a Cars 2 podcast.
Exactly what it's going to be. Sing 2 is just like taking me. You know what I love about, like, not only Sing 1 but Sing 2, the songs that they've got in them now. My girls go around singing unbelievable songs from back in the day. It's fantastic. Great idea from these people.
Yeah.
Brilliant stuff.
Do you know what? It's a real shame that we can't talk about that because we've got to get Musa on.
We'll do it on one of the shows.
It's a real, should we get Musa in?
Let's get him in.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Okay, look, Moose is here now.
He's on the screen.
He's on the screen, baby.
And wave to Moose.
What's happening, Moose?
I'm good. I'm wearing my IAC shirt,
my
actually.
My man Ryan Hunt here as well. So,
I'm actually wearing my IAC shirt, I should have said.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but can you see my one?
I can indeed. Yeah.
It's the up to date. It's the like 2022 one. It's like I'm daily papering and everything.
Look at the flex. It's actually the up to date one.
It's the one.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's now. Look at the sleeves, Moose.
Oh, my God. They're
amazing.
It's incredible.
Come on,
what's going on with Ajax, man, and Alias? They're just doing some unbelievable things.
That looks unbelievable.
Come on, look down at it.
It's an audio format, by the way.
It looks like sort of Spider-Man's training top if Spider-Man grew up in Johannesburg.
You. It's got a vibe. But...
All right, you two, come on.
sorry. Yeah, listen.
Just a couple of dudes
just a
talking about their Ajax tops.
Guys, the big news. It's funny because I watched it the other day. Serena Williams.
Yes.
You know, and...
The GOAT.
Yes, the GOAT. And watched her... You know, explain, you know, she's retiring and, you know, the love she was giving Serena. I just burst into tears.
Did you?
I did, simply because I remember when Serena came on, obviously Venus had already done her stuff. Remember, Venus was the one that blasted through. You know what I mean? You can't forget it. The beads in the hair, she blasted through. And then we heard that she's got a sister as well who's coming. When you watch the film, no spoilers, you know what I mean? It's amazing. You have to watch the film, but...
Is that King Richard?
Yes, King Richard. And when you saw what Venus done, knowing that, well, fancy that, man. She's got that sister. Oh, that sister's going to have to try and live up to a big sister doing what she's doing. And I remember even in the film, you know, it's no secret, when he said, you are going to be... Because she was obviously looking at Venus, doing what Venus is doing, and she wanted her time. And he's saying, be patient. Your time's coming. You are going to be the greatest of all time.
Yeah.
Right. And for her to deal with our sister was, and then to come and surpass her sister, a great sister, with everything that she's had to go through to get there was, you know, Compton. Mm. Compton, they grew up, they started playing on those courses, those tennis courts in Compton. You know, with the drug dealers and the dad having to, you know, it's like, the story is amazing. Can I just say quickly, before you guys start, I will never forgive Will Smith simply because what he got the Oscar for, and it tarnished it for me. Mm. It's tarnished what they've done with his fucking stupidity and his ego. You know, so, you know, that's a whole different story. But
what, to steal, he basically took the conversation away from that, didn't
yes.
it? It was a moment to celebrate that fucking, what they've done, yeah.
Honestly, Moose, honestly.
If there was anything, my biggest issue with that was... Exactly that you know, that act, that slap derailed the entire conversation, because what they did, I mean, when I heard about Serena, I didn't believe it. I didn't believe there was someone that was going to be even better. Like, not that I didn't say they were lying, but it was more like, it was difficult to imagine someone.
Yeah. You feel like it's just really, okay, yeah, we'll see. Yeah.
It's like saying Tiger Woods has a younger brother.
Yes.
It's like, it was the same level of that. It's like, really? Tiger's got a younger brother? Like, no.
Actually, can I just jump in on that? So Ben Rothenberg wrote a tweet the other day saying, with Serena Williams now retired, the active WTA player with the most Grand Slam titles is now Venus.
You're joking.
Was that seven or eight? Is it seven?
Wild.
It's mind-blowing.
But I tell you what, the thing about Serena was so striking. It's just the... How do I explain it? There are two things that I couldn't really process and have been having to take time away from social. One was when Tony, this sounds really dramatic, when Toni Morrison passed, I basically had to, like, I couldn't read the tributes because it was too overwhelming, because what black women have to endure in our society, let alone do it at that level of excellence where everyone's coming at you and still have a life that is incredible. So the Toni Morrison thing was very difficult to process. And the Serena retirement speech was very difficult. And I saw people going, oh, like, it's the end of an era. And I just thought, it's actually, I couldn't have all that kind. It was kind of, it was like a grief, because for a lot of people, Serena, like, it was someone people turned to whenever their lives were difficult. They're like, look, at least that person's fighting. A bit like Rafa Nadal. You look at Rafa Nadal and you think, if Rafa can overcome, then I can overcome. And for a lot of people, they saw themselves in Serena. Certainly a lot of, you know, black friends of mine, they were like, Serena was someone who was a real beacon for people for so long.
This is the thing for people like myself or people who look like me, right? So like... white dudes in the 30s, or just white people in general, I think, who have...
With no branding.
No branding. No brand. I got branding. You just don't know what the branding is, man. But we've had so many sporting icons, especially in pretty much every sport, that look like us. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Mm. So F1 is a prime example. Why Lewis is so special is that he's managed to elevate himself to the absolute, like, being in the conversation for one of the greatest drivers of all time in a sport that is so difficult to get into anyway, let alone to win a Grand Prix. Mm. There are loads of people who are pundits who have never even won a Grand Prix, let alone a title, let alone equaling the amount of the most amount of titles that anyone has ever won and had to deal with all the other stuff. That, yes. For example, if someone like myself who was going into F1 at 4 years old or trying to go into motor racing wouldn't have to deal with. Dealing with icons like Serena and Venus as well before Serena came through. And Serena said something amazing where she said, like, yeah, if it wasn't for Venus.
Yeah, she wouldn't, yeah.
And it's that's amazing. And it's just doing it and elevating themselves to not just the best of their era, but maybe like, she's the greatest of all time.
I think when you read the story, I remember when Sharapova was coming on, and like we're talking about somebody who, if the establishment could build a woman tennis player, they're probably going to build her looking like Sharapova. You know, one of the most disappointing things I heard was listening to Navratilova, who I really adored when I was younger. My mum loved tennis. Listening to how Martina Navratilova lambasting Serena and Venus about their shapes, their body, and how they are. Manly.
With what she went through. Yes. With what she went through.
So, right? It's honestly, it was so bad. And then when Sharapova came along, and that's what they wanted. They were constantly talking about her shape. Yeah. Oh, she's not fit enough. Oh, they've got, you know what they've got to do? They've just got to run around the place because she won't be fit enough. Her body shape, her bunda, her bum's too big. You know what I mean? Her muscles are too big. And like the Sharapovas of this world, none of them could get anywhere near her. So for young black girls, they're saying, hang on a minute. She's got a body shape like that. She looks like that. She's hammering everybody. And people are still saying that it's a rivalry. It's not a fucking rivalry.
They wouldn't give it to her. That's the thing.
They wanted it to be a rivalry so much because then if Sharapova, which she obviously couldn't, beat her enough for her to be the one that is up there on the pedestal, right? Mm. That is what they wanted. So as they can then go even harder on, you can't look like this to be a tennis player. You can't play like this. But what Serena done was defied everything. She defied them all and then inspired a whole nation of girls who looked like she
looked
like
her. And she had a happy ending.
Color.
She had a happy ending. Crucially, here's the thing as well. Mm. How often do these sporting icons not get their happy ending? Like this is, shout out to Steffi Graf. Steffi just won and just bounced, right? Bounced. And like yeah, Serena.
We talk about this all the time, don't
Steffi,
we?
Steffi Graf just won and bounced. And Serena, you know, met a lovely man, got a family, and is just going to go and do her thing. And that's part of my concern is this as well. Like with this, when you have these sporting icons who are black, you're concerned for they've given the world so much under all that pressure. You just want them to get their piss as well. So you see like LeBron James, LeBron's going to be happy. You're fine. And it sounds ridiculous. Look, I've never met these people. I'm not going to meet these people. I don't know these people. Mm. The thing about this is it's more like you look at them because you know in your own life, people who've given the world so much at so much cost to themselves, you're like, I hope that they get something for themselves in a personal sense. And because they often don't, like, you know, how many people we've seen, like, you know, who don't get their just desserts despite providing the world with all this joy and all this inspiration. So it's actually off the court as much as on the court. I'm like, I'm happy for her.
I'm delighted for her. One of the greatest sports people of all time.
Any sport, any gender.
I think if you put like a top 10 of all time,
she's in
even a top five, she's in there.
Yeah.
Top five of all time. Yeah. It's not even controversial.
Not going to sound like Harry Redknapp when he was talking about Frank Lampard, but there ain't any doubt in my mind about that, lads. I've got a funny feeling this show is going to be full of flowers.
I think it's a flower fest.
Listen, she deserves a whole Kew Garden of flowers.
Wow.
Just give her a botanical garden. Some people deserve a botanical garden, and that's her.
Moose, I like it.
The first of botanical garden in Mighty's house.
Yes.
Serena Williams. Serena.
I love that, Moose. Serena Williams.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Now onto some sad news. Is it sad? Is it sad? I mean, it's sad on a personal level.
You know why it's sad? Because,
bittersweet.
Huh?
Bittersweet.
Bittersweet. But the love I have for Hector Bellerin, and you know something, he's a player that when he came on the scene, and they called him the Spanish Roadman. It's called him Spanish Roadman in London because he's just like a roadman. He's so in touch. You know what he is? He is he's an artist who plays football. That's what he is. He's an artist who plays football. Man is so connected with everything, right? He's, we don't even want to go into the style. And what I used to love is that the people, they just can't, they couldn't deal. Sometimes you'd see him in a picture and you can't deal with that. Swag and style and just like how classy this guy is. And when he came on the scene, I remember we had Debussy.
He got pushed by Arnautovic into the hoardings at the Emirates and did his shoulder. And that's how Hector got
in. And then Hector got in. But the thing is, when Hector came in, and, you know, we always thought his pace, obviously. Mm. And, you know, starting at like at midfield at Barcelona, we turned him into a right back. And obviously, you could see the way he played. His pace, he was amazing. And I was thinking, this is our guy for the next 10 years. I think he missed out on the first FA Cup final, but then I think he played in...
He missed the 2014
he played 2015.
But that was Sanya. Sanya was still in the squad then.
You know, the thing is, all the time, right, while he was there, Moose, he was somebody that, especially when he was playing his stuff, he's obviously, Mikel's playing a different way now, but there was always a kind of like in the background, a vibe that, Barcelona's going to become knocking at this guy's door at some stage. He's going to go
It was rumoured for ages, wasn't it? Because also he broke in a couple of years after the whole, like, when they were just going on about signing Arsenal players or signing Fabregas, and he's got Barca DNA. I was like, if I hear Barca DNA one more time.
You know, the thing is, it's the way it's finally happened. It's happened for him, and I'm delighted, and I hope that he gets to play well. If I'm going to be totally honest, because we've done the podcast with him and Betis.
I wanted him to go to Betis.
I'm desperate for him to go to Betis.
Only because you wanted to go and watch El Gran Derby.
I wanted to go with him there. But they can't afford it. But you would never have thought that it would have ended like it's ended up. And he's going there. It's on a free. We're kind of pleased to see him go. The management is pleased to see him go in the way it's going. And
like in terms of like, there was no place for him to get into the squad, but they wanted him to play because he's so, that's what you mean by pleased to go, right?
Yeah, that's the only way I mean. But in respect of him and the way it's worked, I just hope he can go there and just have a nice realization, play well and do great. Because when you hear Mikel Arteta's conversation about when him and Hector had the chat the day before, he said it wasn't manager and player, it was like two friends speaking.
They were in the same team together. Yeah. They won like the FA Cup and stuff together, didn't
they? He's somebody He's one of the great ones, I think, for us in respects of a club servant and the way he was. The injuries, I think, they took their toll on him for a certain time. You know, that knee, the first time there was the knee.
Yeah, that was horrible.
You know, that was a horrible one that kind of curtailed him a little bit. But in respects of a servant to the club and the way he is and the kind of guy he is, I'm sure that everybody heard him when he was on Wrighty's House, you know, the depth of him. I really, really am so sad to see him go, and you just want him to be happy. I want him to have happiness. I think he deserves it the way he is.
Having that year at Betis, which I think was such a personal thing for him as well because of his dad being a Betis fan. Them winning the Copa as well, which I think is like, like he just went to Betis, won a Copa, had an amazing season, and then has gone back to the club that he came up with. That's kind of an amazing journey for someone who has been through quite a lot, especially on the injury front, and who I think has had to learn to become a different player post cruciate ligament injury.
Yeah.
And I think Spain will suit him a little bit more for that. And Barca will, because Xavi's Barca will want to have all of the ball.
They've never needed a player like that so much. Like sometimes a player comes to the club and you're like, is the club in its current setting deserve a player like that? Yeah, I think they need a player like that. Mm. Like in the same way that like Barcelona needed Lewandowski to lock down the forward area and just bring the whole attack together. Like Lewandowski, they needed some of that energy. Actually, in a way that they needed Memphis too. Like when Barcelona were down, they needed someone with the kind of ego, not in a bad way, the confidence of Memphis to go in and just claim it. And now they've got a finisher like Lewandowski to claim it. They need a player like Bellerin to remind them of what they were and can be. And that, you know, we'll get into the Luis Figo thing later, but what is so powerful about Barcelona is the identity. And this is the amazing thing about Bellerin, what I saw at Arsenal from the outside looking in, of course, is that when Arsenal was struggling in a traditional sense, like winning FA Cups, but not leagues, and you know, Arsenal is such a great team that we expect league titles from them every so often, obviously with the financial inequalities, it's less likely, but at a time when Arsenal needed to be reminded their identity, he carried that. And yes, that's bigger than any, I mean, that's bigger for that period, that's bigger than any league trophy, if I'm honest.
Yeah, and he was he represented the club, I think, during the lockdown as in the captain's meetings mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And was involved in a lot of really good causes. I think, didn't the clubs raise a load of money for the NHS? And yeah, obviously he's been very vocal about really, really amazing stuff.
Yeah, women's level. Rights, you know, abortion. You know, it wasn't easy to do that. Yeah.
And,
yeah,
and like, at a one time when not a lot of football
really
was
gave our female players a lot of love.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. It just, I don't know, man. I mean, having had the pleasure of speaking to him for that hour or so when we did the Righty's House episode, and just really, like, when we were waiting for you to come on, we're just talking about disco.
Yeah.
And just, like, just someone who, I don't know, because I think active footballers, the ones that I've had experiences with, they're, it's really hard to get them to just actually be themselves a lot of the time, I think.
Yes.
Especially in an interview sense, when they're doing something like a podcast, right? I get it if it's behind the scenes. They don't know you a lot of the time. They know you, yes, Ian, but like they'll come on and they'll be talking. But Hector straight away was just like, we're just shooting the shit about stuff, talking about NTS and talking about like music and stuff like that. And like,
you know what, Hector? I'll tell you what, Hector, it's the kind of thing, like, you see, if we went across to Hector's place and he said, you know what, just come check me for, you know, let's spend a day in that. You know that is going to be an unbelievable day. It's going to be unbelievable in the way that he is, the way his vibe is, his friends, people around him are all probably really cool and chilled, and that, you know, that it's going to be that kind of like a utopian kind of vibe where everybody's so beautiful and peaceful and wonderful.
I want to go
playing the best music, eating the best food, people wearing the coolest clothes, just like without, but we're talking about the
without
people
pretension,
are not
no front.
Trying.
Yeah.
People are not trying, you know? People with money will put on this kind of like situation and put you in a situation, but you'll feel it because it's not genuine. It's not a place that's built from love. It's built from the fact that they've got the capability of building it, and because they've got the money to go bam. But let's get a load of that. You feel like everything that will be in and around Hector's place and that it will be perfect.
Yeah, I bet he has like at least one chair designed by Eames. He does, and
he'll have something that you will not have known about.
I think we should wrap up on Hector and give him a load of flowers because it's obviously he's
I'm
been
sad
amazing.
To see him go, but
yeah,
like,
same.
You know, I'm glad. Yeah. I'm sad and glad to see him go because hopefully he's going to go where he wants to be and finish beautifully. He deserves a good ending.
Yeah, I agree. And I think he's going to do well at Barca. And I hope he, you know, has many, many years left in his career because I think he's still a really, really good footballer. Yeah, I think, as we saw last season at Betis. So,
So we
staying on Arsenal quick.
Yeah.
Because I know we did a load of it on Stadio. But do you want some? Have you got any thoughts on the Man United game?
You know something. I thought that we went. And we were pretty good. I thought we were quite. I was really quite impressed with the fact that we've not gone there and felt like, okay, we've won five on the spin. We went there, and to a certain extent, I think that when we brought it back to 1-1, one of the few times where we passed the ball through the lines, because Man United were forcing us out wide to Saka, who was doubled up, and that it was very difficult. I thought some of the time Jesus, like I've done in the analysis, when he was outside the box, people weren't attacking it enough. And when we did do that, we scored. And I thought that when we went to 1-1, we should have just like said, okay, yeah, we're at Man United, but we're not in no rush. You know what I mean? We're going to play it. I thought Erdogan, they should have played a bit more and then got Man United to come onto us and then bam, pass through them, bam. But we just went. We went at them. I don't know if it's because of our youth or something.
It's a little bit of inexperience, I think.
Fucking went for them. And in the end, you know, like Mikel said, you know, there was a bit of indiscipline, weren't brave enough. And you could see it to a certain extent because I thought that Martin Ødegaard, when you saw, I saw Eriksen follow him all the way across the pitch once, Moose, where I was thinking, yep, that's his job. Once they haven't got the ball, where's Ødegaard? And he was on him. And in the same sequence, he followed him up the pitch, followed Ødegaard, and then the ball broke there. And then when they came back to the middle of the pitch, Ødegaard did not stay with him.
Mm-hmm. He did that match today, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw
did
that
not
thing.
Stay. And you know what? I was thinking, no, Martin, don't. And then what happens is where you know, Moose, that off is Ødegaard. When the ball, it's like, the realization, right, when the person with time on the ball, you could see it happening in Erdogan's head. Eriksen's got a lot of time. Bruno's in space. And then all of a sudden, he tries to sprint to him. And that's when you realize it's too late. And why I have to give Man United the credit, because they were fucking ruthless in the way they finished us in those situations. Ruthless. Bam, Eriksen, Fernandes. And Fernandes, as much as like it can be quite not, he's passed with the outside of foot.
That was so good.
It was beautiful in the way the ball was. You know, you'd have thought that he would have done it with his left foot to get the power so it can run all the way up there. Outside of the right foot, inside pass, not like in the through the gap, inside. So Rashford came in onto it, and then I was really pleased for Rashford simply because the same with the Liverpool game when we was there, I was pleased for him, and that's when Curtis Jones was telling me sit down. I said no, I'm pleased for Rashford because if he's another one of those people that everything he does it's quite defining, and if he misses that. It goes to that place again of real negativity. And what I've seen with him up to this point, with the last few goals he scored, especially the two he scored against us, is somebody that is, that's me. If I'm going through on that, I'm scoring. And it was all perfect for them. And, you know, I can't complain about that because I think that we went there with the right attitude and just showed a little bit of naivety. And I thought the Man United in the current climate, those players, man, you don't want the Man United players to get that fucking confidence.
No.
Eriksen's the one. And Rashford looks like,
Reborn.
Fucking starting. Yeah. I'm putting this pot on the fire now because I'm getting ready. I'm trying to do a Musa. He's in the cupboard. Yes, this is the right pot. Boiling the water. I'm ready to cook. Because like he looks in that instant, right, guys, he looks like he's unstoppable. There's no one that's going to stop him. The only thing that's going to stop him is if the pass isn't good enough or his touches are not good enough. You could see even with, I think both of them, he got a little, both of the finishes got a little clip off of somebody. They just weren't quite there in time like Ben White. And then I think that there's someone else with the goalkeeper, it just slipped under the foot but he's getting the luck now.
Yes.
And that is why I wasn't too disappointed with it. Yeah, you can imagine I got a lot of shit because people saying,
Isn't it ironic? It's ironic because he got the same treatment from Ten Hag that Mourinho got from Tammy. Now, obviously, they gave to Tammy. He's like, you're young, I'm going to make you my nine. And obviously, when Zlatan was there, you couldn't give him that because of Zlatan and all the rest of it. But like Van Gaal, for example, seeing that in him, Rashford's almost the kind of player where you have to gamble on him.
Mm.
You have to back him because we've just seen consistently, whenever a manager has truly backed Rashford through the middle, and put resources behind him because he's so gifted. He can play out wide and do a job there. Yeah. But he really, we saw him start. He was his debut. Like he was brilliant against those Arsenal and scored the two goals that time.
Mm-hmm.
That's who he is. Like that's that really
kind of
who Rashford
pace,
is.
With that kind of pace and that.
And the touch.
Good
and the
time
touch.
As well for the, in terms of the World Cup. It was a good time to start hitting some good form and consistent form and looking like he's returning to the player that we all thought he could be.
Because he's fucking dangerous.
Yeah, man. Are we giving him, we're giving everyone else flowers. Marcus some flowers?
I think I want to give him flowers simply because the journey that he's on and he will continue to be on for the rest of his career simply because of what's happened to him off the field and what he's done. He's always going to be somebody that's going to be scrutinized and it's going to be his football form, which is going to keep them off of him. That's what I believe because as soon as it stops happening, like we saw, it's because he needs to fucking concentrate on his football. He needs to do this. He's doing too much outside. That's why he's somebody that I get very nervous about watching because I feel that there's so much pressure on him. There's more pressure simply because of who he is and what he's, and he's at that club. So I'm just pleased that that's happened. I'm going to give him some flowers simply because I just like the way it's working out for him. Can I just, there's somebody else quickly? It will be no. You know something? I'm so pleased with the way it's going for him because I remember Arsenal fans, and it's the same thing what they've done with Oxlade-Chamberlain. They ridiculed him when he left. We went there for a little bit into Liverpool, done a couple of things, said, that's what 40 million gets you. It's the same with Iwobi. I remember watching him play in the midfield early days for Arsenal at West Ham, and you're seeing something. We're not seeing the guy, he doesn't score enough goals. We're not seeing him score enough goals. We're not seeing that last bit of assist, but his ball progression and work rate what Frank has now recognised and put him in there. And you know when you can really feel it when you watch the Everton fans and listen to the Everton fans when he's doing his work. They are adoring him now. I'm loving the way it's working out for Iwobi. And I got a lot of shit because, like, when I done my analysis on Iwobi for Match of the Day, I got a load of people saying, Ian Wright only fucking analyses the black players. I said, I didn't even say anything, you know what I mean? Because people seem to think I've got a burner account or something and answer it.
If I speak.
But like the thing with him is that you try to explain to these people, because I don't want to get vexed with him, saying, I'm just talking about somebody's making a massive difference to whatever and need. The work rate, the way his ball progression, his passing, everything. He's the pass before the assist. People don't realise it, but the Everton fans are now starting to realise if they get the right players in and around him, he is going to be a force for them. He's going to do it, and I'm pleased for him because he was ridiculed. Oh my God, Everton have paid what for Iwobi? They'll see. And when you watch him, the Everton fans are already recognise how important he is to them.
There are players, I think, I think in an ideal world, their career would have gone the other way around. So I think, no disrespect to Everton or anything like that, but for example, if Iwobi had come through at Everton, he'd be getting the hype and the price tags flowing around like Gordon is.
Yes.
His ability to link and his ability to control tempo is just something that we never really saw at Arsenal because he was never played in the role or the positions that he could do that. And I think recently at Everton, you've seen his ability to do that. And maybe that's a maturity thing as well. But also just how people get pigeonholed as a certain kind of player at a club because they're playing a very, very specific role in the team that's expected to challenge for titles. Mm-hmm. Whereas actually, if someone like Iwobi had come through at, I don't know, like maybe come through at Leicester, say, for example, or maybe come through
Southampton.
Prime example. Like with Chambo.
Yes.
They get a different rep.
Can we be honest though? The Iwobi backlash, let's be honest. A lot of it is because fans can't forgive themselves for having fallen in love with you. That's what it is. Like, they fall in love with the player, it doesn't work out what they want, and they're like, what do I do all this love and grief? I've got to throw it into anger because
it's
I can't
like
just process it.
It's like that thing we always say on Stadio, right? I'm sick of getting my heart broken by men I've never met.
Exactly.
Well, I think
there was someone...
Yeah, go on, Moose.
One of my favorite Twitter bios, there was someone, shout out to Cecile, she closed down her account a few... she's French, closed her account down a few years ago, and is off there having a good life, doing something else with herself, you know. Probably more sensible thing on Twitter. But her bio, Cecile's bio was, I hate because I care.
I think Iwobi would never have got to get to this level if he stayed at Arsenal simply because he came through at Arsenal. Mm. Moved him everywhere.
That's what I mean, yeah.
It moved him everywhere. And
although he joined as a, but he still like, he got moved all over the place.
Moved all over the place. It would never have happened for him at Arsenal for him to do what he's doing now, because you look at his work rate, and his work rate kind of playing that 6-8-ish kind of like position is unbelievable. You need, and it's the kind of intensity that Mikel wants now and needs now. We need that. We need somebody who can press like that. But I'm pleased that when you go to something, not pleased, but when you go somewhere like Everton for that money, at some stage, this is what I find, you have to try and find value for the money. So you have to say, right, let's try him in here. And it's obvious that Frank has seen him in training. And he's seen him play like that. He said, you know what, let me try him in there, because you can't just buy him for the money you've bought him for, play him on the wing, play him like wing back, not play him in there, because that's where he probably wants to play, in the middle where he is, playing everywhere else, playing as 10, whatever you're going to play him. And he's never quite had the opportunity. And I think because of the amount of money you spend, somewhere along the line, you've got to get value for the money. So you try him in there and it's working. You know, it's working for him.
This is why one day I want Frank Lampard to start up a midfielders academy. Because if you look at like Mason Mount and all the rest of it, like if you look at the players that he's really developed, when they have that kind of that skill to be the glue guy, and I look at someone like Toni Kroos with his midfield, his academy, like it's not a midfielders academy, but I just think someone like Lampard is such a, it's no accident that the best aspects of his coaching have come in that area. Because he's someone that does read the game well and does see that quality in people and does see that ability to like develop a game and run a game. And to Lampard's credit and to Iwobi, Lampard suffered from the same thing. Like, if Lampard hadn't scored as many goals as he had, he got the headlines for the goals, but actually, here's the weird thing about Lampard. I actually always felt that the goals were the least impressive part of his game. Mm. Much as I loved watching him score goals, the most impressive thing about Lampard was Lampard on his day could play anywhere in the midfield three.
Six, eight,
he could,
ten.
He could play 6, 8, 10. He could do all of it.
Sorry.
And I think...
And there ain't any doubt in my mind about that. I just want to do that.
It's Juno moves. Yeah. His ego was out of it completely. We knew that he was a goal monster, but his ego, because I've seen him play like the six, just bam, pass it there. Bam, pass it, just stop people. See him do the eight, see him do the 10, see him do everything.
Amazing, amazing at it, yeah.
Take the ball, pass the ball, baby. Take the ball, pass Jesus, everybody's just sneaking in, just nicking flowers from a fucking stall. I've got to give
some. It's the end of summer sale. It's the end of summer Writers House flower sale.
I'm giving it Wobi some simply because I'm loving what's happening for him and I like the way his trajectory. I love the fact that he's doing something somewhere where they need exactly what he's doing right now. Somebody for the fans to like bank on, somebody that's going to never, ever give less than what he gives. And he deserves that because I just hate when players like him, all they want to do is play and express themselves and just get on with it. And they're just continually being like downtrodden. So I'm glad he's getting some love.
And can we be real? There are a few better places in England to be a beloved hero than Everton.
Everton, yeah. They will love you. They will love you.
All right.
Yeah, exactly.
Should we move on to someone who started as a hero and lived long enough to become the villain?
Yes.
So we all watched the Luis Figo affair documentary on Netflix.
Brilliant.
In the last week. Which, if you haven't watched it, by the way, please go and watch it. It's is incredible.
Magnificent insight.
It's all about the famous, infamous transfer from Barcelona to Real Madrid, how it came about. Interviews with a lot of the key people involved.
The first Galactico.
He was the first Galactico, right? Mm. It's like Captain America, the first Avenger.
Yes, that's who he is.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, yeah, it's exactly that. It's exactly that, Ryan.
Oh my God.
And can I say as well, in respect of Figo, when he went there, you know, you hear about these people because you just hear about them because people talk about, oh, this Portuguese fella called Figo. You hear about these guys. We don't see it. When I saw him at Barcelona, because he went there and it was massive. It was massive news, the airport and everything, everything what happened with him with his unveiling. But like, I didn't realize how good Figo was. Right. I did not know how good he was. So you start seeing what he was capable of doing. Then you hear people like Roberto Carlos saying, when you're going to play against, you don't sleep.
Yeah.
Yes.
You don't sleep.
Roberto Carlos. You know, can I just quickly say, before we get into the analysis of Figo, just a shout out to the makers of this documentary, The Figo Affair, because it was absolutely jaw-dropping. Put it this way, you know how good it was? Mm. I was watching it and I thought I'd been watching it for half an hour and I look at the time and it's 10 minutes in because I'm absorbing everything. Mm. I'm like going, oh my
God,
the
access.
The access. Yeah. And also, can I say this as well, before we get into more generally, the haunted expressions of each of the people involved as they talk about 20 years ago. Even the ones who benefited from it,
Pep.
They still look a bit...
Pep pops
incredible.
Up and he's just like, wow, 20 years ago, huh?
Yeah, but you know what? I'm like, hang on a minute. A lot of these people haven't spoken to each other for years.
It's the archive, the quality of it.
Do you know what as well? I was thinking, before we go into it properly, but there is a link from... Do you remember the four Clásicos?
Yes.
Pep, Mourinho. Mm. And there's one bit where Pep goes into a press conference and he's looking, he's like, which one is his camera? Mm-hmm. And he looks right down the camera and he calls him Jose because he says, he calls me Pep. So I'm going to call him Jose. And he snaps. I think there's a direct link from Pep's heartbreak from Figo leaving to that press conference.
Of course there is. Yeah, of course. And you can see it radicalizes.
It's another heartbreak because Mourinho and Pep were close at Barcelona,
yeah. Yeah,
when you see Pep in this, and Pep's an incredible. It's funny because you can study this documentary from each protagonist's perspective.
Like even when you saw him at a birthday party of these little Figo's little, the way he's just sitting in the corner, Pep. It really,
to be honest, Ian,
quite sweet.
Yeah. Ian, I lost myself in them. I'm like, oh my goodness, this beautiful man. I'm like, oh my God,
that's an extremely handsome pair of best friends, isn't it?
It's true.
How does this man, how do you get to look like Luis Figo and play football at that level? It's just not fair. That was my first take on it. The second thing I would say about the Figo thing, and we'll get into it as a player, the thing that made him incredible, because obviously I was a big fan of Michael Laudrup before that. And
yes.
Laudrup, another player that went between Barca and Real. Yeah. But that was different. That was different because it was very obvious to people that the dirt had kind of been done on Laudrup. Yeah. So people were like, you know what? We kind of messed this guy around. The Figo thing, and this is what's amazing about this series, this documentary, is the only person who did not underestimate the possibilities within football was Perez. He is the only person the whole documentary who is not surprised by any of the unfolding events at any point.
It's yeah.
The great moment on the couch when Joan Gaspar is there, the then president of Barcelona, and he's like, you're very tense. And Perez is chill. And it's like, well, of course he's tense because he knows he's about to be eaten and he's sitting next to his apex predator.
Yes.
And the amazing thing about this documentary
Barcelona actually win that game though.
Yeah, but here's the weird. Yeah, but they won the battle, but they lost the war.
Well, this is the thing. I think this is the thing that is that the Figo affair is more of a, it's less about the individual transfer and more about what would, there's a lot wrapped up in that transfer, I think, from Madrid or like Spain and Catalonia, Madrid and Barcelona specifically as cities. And this new president coming in that didn't just want one of the best players in the world, but wanted to essentially just like put their foot on
absolutely
the club.
Yeah.
And that's why I think it was so seismic in that it was this.
Yeah, but right, they've taken arguably at the time, the best player in the world, right?
Yes.
Barcelona's captain, you know, and Madrid have taken him away.
It's chess.
Like for instance, when he got the call, Paolo Futre, because I think Paolo Futre looks like I'd love to see. Like,
I think that's the first time that someone other than Musa has dropped the first Paolo Futre reference on the podcast.
I swear to God, I remember. Yeah, but the thing is, Paolo Futre, when we jump, because remember he came across here and played for West Ham for a bit.
Yes.
And if he didn't play, Paul, John Moncur tells a great story. If he's not playing number 10, he literally leaves. He leaves. He's one of those characters, and even in it, Figo, when they mention Paolo Futre, Figo he kind of laughs and smiles like, hey. Because he was a hero. He was like, for me, he was meant to be the next, like Maradona, the way he played.
He was incredible.
Unbelievable. And when he tells you how this started, and then he phoned his, Figo's agent, the agent, he hung up. Because he was in the room with Florentino Perez, he had to act like he was still on the phone. And that's when he done all this stuff. But like, and he said it started with a lie. But you're right, Moose, because at no stage, and the more I watched it, and I was watching it again yesterday, Florentino Perez, at no stage did that man look like this wasn't going to happen. It's
right.
And you know, you look at Figo saying, it's fucking impossible. Don't stop bothering me. No, don't. You know, it's not going to happen. Even Gaspar.
Everyone else is naive, but Perez. No one else can see history approaching. No one else. Figo, you can see, has been seduced by, obviously by money, by security, but first of all, by fandom. Because if anybody else contacts him like Paolo Futre did about that deal, it doesn't have the same thing. But you see, he still adores him even now. My idol, right? Your idol says, let's get on this investment. It's like watching someone trying to sell someone crypto, right? The only person you'll buy crypto off is someone you worship.
Maradona could sell me crypto.
Yeah, right. He could sell you it now. If Maradona called you, God bless him. If he called you now from beyond, he'd be like, oh, Ian, buy crypto. You do it.
Yes.
Because it's Maradona. And you see the genius.
There's a joke
of
there about only getting into heaven with Bitcoin or something. I don't know. I'm not going to go there.
But like the seduction, the way that everyone is seduced is incredible. And what's amazing about this documentary is not that it leaves questions unanswered. It doesn't do that. But it leaves questions open. So you're like, when you see that Vega starts representing Figo because he goes into like do the Benfica sporting stuff, you're like, yeah, but what's their relationship like now?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like, and Gaspar as well. Gaspar, the way, because he
looks very sad.
He looks, ultimately.
Yeah, it broke his presidency, didn't it, basically?
Yeah, but here's the thing. Here's the problem. This is the problem. We've seen this before with Barcelona, right? The two defining transfers of the last 25 years have gone against Barca, the Neymar one, and the Figo one. And why did both of them happen? Because of the naivety of the people running the club.
Yeah.
You know, the contract clause.
Gaspar, they should
have put a ring on it. They should have put a ring on it. Oh, he kept asking for money. Listen, he's the best player in the world. If he wants four times the money, you pay him four times the money.
I mean, this is the difference because there's something, this whole like more than a club thing. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot, and Barcelona, we've talked about this numerous times on Stadio about how Barcelona really dine out on that. Whereas what's really interesting in that when, in this documentary specifically, is when Perez unveils Figo.
Yeah.
Di Stefano is there. which is the equivalent of bringing Johan Cruyff out to every single unveiling at Barcelona.
Yeah. Yes.
But also it's his speech where he says, the fans will love you, the members will love you, and the directors will love you, which is a specific reference to the reason that Figo was just like, I felt underappreciated as a player. And I think that the thing about that is that when you're a player of that significance at a club like Barcelona, or any major club in world football, it's just a tiny seed that can just get like just watered and watered. And then before you know it, like, because he calls like the people from Sport, right, to come and do that thing about saying, I'm not going, here's my Barcelona shirt. And I actually don't think he wanted to go.
No,
I don't think he wanted to go. And then I think it's like, he then gets pushed into this situation via circumstance and I think poor representation and just basically getting lent on by people in certain ways.
Remember, there was a time in it where he said to the agent, just keep making a call, see what happens, because
he genuinely believed,
I know, because I've been in this kind of contract situation. I remember with Arsenal, I remember it's even before when, because remember I told you about there was a time when Palmer came in for me, and I remember there was a little time where Sampdoria was sniffing around, and I was saying to him, just keep talking, because you think,
I'm going to get a better offer here. Yeah.
I've got no intention of leaving Arsenal. None at all. And the way Figo says it is, keep talking.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Figo genuinely believes there's no fucking way these are not going to let me go.
Exactly,
and remember, at the time, the buyout clause was 60 million. Gaspar actually said, no one, anybody who's willing to pay that, in that kind of laughy, kind of jokey manner.
Which is exactly what they did for Neymar.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes, yes. You know? Yes, exactly.
And the arrogance, because they think this is Barcelona. Who's going to do that? Not knowing that we're dealing with Florentino Perez.
The bit when Gaspar talks about himself in the third person.
Yeah.
When he hangs up, he says that Figo calls me up and Figo disputes it. There's obviously a lot of historical revisionism. Who knows who's telling? But the fact that when Gaspar tells the story, recounts the story, he talks about himself in the third person is so interesting.
Yeah, like, but Moose, the ego. I think
he thinks he's talking to the most talented, let's say, like, you're the Pope, and you're talking to the most talented, like, you know, young up and coming speaker. I'm an atheist. I'm losing my faith in God. No, you'll never leave us. You'll never leave the Roman Catholic Church. It's like that. It's like, it's the confidence in the institution and the arrogance without remembering. Yes, Barcelona is more than a club. The reason it's more than a club is because actual directors died, like, for political purposes. It's more than a club because, and the point is, individuals did things that made this institution great.
Mm-hmm.
You're the president of this club, right? So those directors never took the club for granted. You shouldn't either.
Yes.
And Gaspar in that moment was like, you're trading off history. You're assuming you can just sit there with the best player in the world and just be like, oh, you know, and he almost like, you know, go away, my child. We're busy.
Exactly.
We have elections. We're
not doing no contracts in this time. Now, and
Barcelona team. Mm-hmm. I watched that Barcelona team and those two Louis van Gaal league championships they won back to back. They were very, very awkward. He brought in some Dutch players. It wasn't much chemistry. It was very, very awkward. Xabi was there, but in and out. It was very, very, they owed a lot to the individual brilliance of Rivaldo and Luis Figo. So when Luis Figo says, I bailed out Van Gaal plenty of times in the last 2 years, that's what he means. He's like,
join the queue, buddy. Really join the queue.
This team was being held together by more individual brilliance than systems.
But Moose, this is why, as a player, you recognize that because it's, you know, you go through a phase, right? I remember there was a phase I was going through where we were winning at Arsenal 1-0, and I was scoring it. You cannot help but feel like, I'm doing it, man. You do not think that for 1 second upstairs that they're not going to say, listen, man, we got to make sure he's okay. Figo only wanted a better deal.
Yeah.
He didn't realise that the lengths that Florentino Perez would go to get him, because what it would mean to him, because remember, they've just won, I think they've won the Champions League or something.
They won two years, right?
So he's the incoming president. He has to fucking come with some flex.
Yeah, man.
He had to come with some flex.
And that is a flex,
That's the flex. And when you look at his face, which is so great for me, like you say, Moose, and rightly say, this man at no stage didn't believe this wasn't going to happen. Everybody's saying it's impossible. No, so don't want to talk about it. When Futre says about the amount of money you want for, and this is the thing with Figo's agent, he hung up on Futre, and Futre had to act like he was still on it. Put the phone down, Then he said about the commission, the fee, what he's going to get.
Yes.
So this is why, whatever we say, Moose, about him not wanting to go, him saying, yeah, keep talking to them, money. Because when he said there's 10 million commission fee, he said 5, 6, done. Then he goes back to phone his agent. All of a sudden, he's listening.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, he's listening.
Money
so
talks, man.
What I was really sad in that situation, because after that point, that deal was not going to happen.
Mm. Yes,
because
when you
see Figo, this man's face is his body is like, I remember when Chelsea got in touch, I put a transfer request in and all that. From that moment on, when they accepted it, and then we was going through that kind of like it's a week or something, I was fucking devastated inside, thinking, please God, don't make this happen. Please God, don't make this happen. Thank God it didn't happen. That is I could totally recognize how Figo's feeling that moment, because
you saw it when
he doesn't want it to happen.
When he gets unveiled there and he's just like, there's like this glazed look in his face, and he's doing the voiceover saying, you're there, but you're not there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I wonder what that Barcelona side would have won had he stayed, because I don't think they kickstarted. Like we say, he was the first Galactico, and I don't think Perez basically starts off on the back foot if he doesn't leave. If Figo doesn't go, that, do you know what? We need to do a what if about this.
A what if.
Wow. Stadio. Yes.
Because I think the next 15, 20 years of Real Madrid, I actually think the whole
Galacticos,
21st century of Real Madrid is completely different.
Completely different. Of course it is. Yeah, you're completely right, Ryan. It's completely different.
For anyone who's young enough or too young to remember what he was like at his peak, I would recommend going and finding all of the highlights and just watching this documentary, actually, because some of the way he played football, he's an all-time great. He's an absolute all-time great. And someone who I just think could play in any side in any era because of the skill set that he has.
You know what else?
He actually looked like a 1960s winger. He looked like an old school. When I saw him dribbling, I'm like, hang on a minute.
Gavincha.
How is this man? He was so fast, but he looked slow because he would float.
But he'd be an eight now. He'd be a very physical eight nowadays, I think.
That's interesting. What was fascinating about it is for us to see from inception to the end, an elite player, one of the greatest in the world, and the negotiations and how it worked, and watching the player himself, the elite player himself, deep down, not really wanting to go. Obviously, he went there and they won stuff. And Barcelona, they didn't win anything for 5 years.
When
he left. So
it was his last year at Real Madrid that they won the league again before he went to Inter. Mm.
And so we're talking about seeing an elite player. The negotiations to go to, not only a massive club, but their biggest rivals, and how that can have an effect on your life, on your whole life.
I want to throw in this very quickly as well. One thing I want to sort of say, maybe I'm just like, this is just me sort of throwing a hot take out there. It's not for the first time, but Jose Vega says this thing. I was the biggest football agent in the world.
Yeah.
He says it in a rueful way. And I wonder if, even though he got three, you know that thing, that old meme, I've won, but at what cost? Mm-hmm. He gets his €3 million commission, but he's utterly out of his depth, actually. He signs a clause promising €30 million.
Wild.
If the transfer doesn't happen.
Doesn't happen.
And Perez puts that clause towards the end. Now, this Perez basically was in the world of construction, right? Construction companies and whatever. Like, it's a different league to football. Like, it's a different league. And it's almost like, you see it often, you see it with Barcelona before, people come from outside the business world, coming into football and just cleaning house, because the type of business world they're moving in is ultimately on a different level. Like the thing about, I put the clause at the end. I put the clause at 30 million. It almost gives the impression that Jose Vega didn't pay proper attention to that because he put that because if he had paid proper attention, he wouldn't have gone to see Figo on that beach in a suit begging him to sign it. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Figo should have realized how desperate they were.
And I wonder if that is what broke Vega in terms of his ego and like, I've been completely outplayed here. Mm. I thought I was the top dog and I'm not even close. And in fact, Perez was like the Greek in The Wire.
You know, he couldn't lose. He was the Greek. I think maybe he would have been in the long term, what would have happened to Real Madrid if he doesn't go would have been interesting. That's why I can't wait for your what if. But the fact is that he covered his ass properly.
Mm. Yes.
Financially is covered. And like in the end, you have to say it was Vega who was under the most amount of pressure.
The most
to make
pressure.
Figo go. And you could see okay, we saw.
What have I done?
Do you think him and Figo still speak now? Because he
can't. I think so. It doesn't seem like it.
He didn't represent him when he moved to Inter. He'd already stopped being his agent.
Yeah, he must have. Yeah, because like you could see there's a kind of like a resignation to Vega when he's sitting there, the way he's speaking. You know, you get the impression that his face looks like a face that says, maybe I would have done things differently. And I feel like I get the impression he's lost a friend.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It felt like that.
Because when he said,
I put my side of the story now after 20 years, it's like, okay, this isn't the thing you've talked about with this guy beforehand.
I think if you haven't seen it, go and watch it. It features some amazing old footage as well of Barcelona.
Oh my God, it's unbelievable.
A lot of young Pep. A little reminder about how good a footballer Pep was as well.
I love that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Pep's heartbreaking, kind of emotional interview that he gives when Figo's gone, and he's just I think it's a really, really fascinating. I mean, obviously it's hammed up a little bit because it would be impossible not to with those kind of characters involved, but the interviews are really, really human and personal. But also I just think it's a really fascinating insight into what can happen during a transfer of this size, because it was kind of like the first one of its type, really, in the modern era. And it's amazing. And actually, just a reminder of how good Luis Figo was at football. And I've got a suggestion.
Go on.
Because it's been a while since we've inducted anyone in.
Now it's all, yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Should he go on the Wall of Fame?
Absolutely. Luis Figo goes on the Wall of Fame. Absolutely.
I love that film. Yeah, wow.
Yeah. Luis Figo, welcome to the Rise House Wall of Fame.
There you go. Are you all right?
So guys, thank you very much. I'm gonna have to say you're gonna have to leave, but it's kind of the house.
It's so funny seeing we've got Musa on this. For those who haven't seen, wouldn't have seen Wright and I in the studio, Musa's on the screen from Berlin, and it feels just very important.
Yes, it feels like he's telling us. You know what he feels like?
Official
number
delegation.
One from Spectre, and he's getting ready to tell us what we need to do. We're looking at the screen.
We're talking to Musa. Musa just said, I stuck a 30 million euro clause at the end.
Yeah.
That's what he's doing. And he just hangs up.
So, Musa, we'll see you soon.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nice.
Look forward
to it. Thank you very much, my friend.
Thanks, man. Much love.
Thank you very much for listening, everybody. I've really enjoyed that. Hopefully you enjoyed it too. And I'll see you again next week. Whatever you're doing, stay safe, dude.